Welcome to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. I'm Carol Olson, your host for Women in Politics. It's a platform to bring women together to talk about their engagement in politics, what's important to them, and what they want our representatives and delegates to hear.
Welcome to Women in Politics, recorded remotely from WRIR during this pandemic. And I'm here with Elaine Summerfield to be a guest on Women in Politics to talk about her campaign to be a Richmond District Rep. So welcome, Elaine. You've been on the radio in so many ways yourself, starting a show for Inspire Indeed and mentoring me to be. So it's fun to be able to interview you.
It's very kind of you. Mentoring you, but
yes, and your original show Inspire Indeed is still going on with new folks running it, so
that's great. Thank you. Well, as you mentioned, I am now delving into a new role for me to consider, which is elected office here in the city of Richmond. I am a candidate for Richmond City Council to represent the 3rd District, which is much of north side of Richmond, where I've lived for the past 10 years. So I'm really excited about the opportunity to serve the community in a new way, in a different way, and build on my years of experience in working in community-based organizations and on community issues, and take a different lens from the public sector on these issues.
Yes. But before we go into your campaign, let's talk about your history in the community and in nonprofit work. You do have extensive history from starting with, looks like, the Virginia Healthcare Foundation to a community foundation, and most recently, the Executive Director of Richmond Opportunities. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of how your focus in nonprofit work and community support has been through the years?
Right. So my first job in Richmond, actually, part of what the reason why I came out to Richmond 18 years ago was to work at Virginia Healthcare Foundation, where I had a role as program officer. And it was a really great way to learn about access to healthcare issues and how access to healthcare impacts one's overall wellness and ability to thrive. Learned a lot about the Commonwealth of Virginia, coming here from the West Coast, and got to see what was going on in all corners of Virginia. Got to meet incredible leaders in the community, you know, doing work like setting up free clinics in Abingdon and Smith County. And, you know, much as I loved that work, I also wanted to spend more time in Richmond, where I was living, and really start to work on issues related to how we can promote community change in Richmond. So I did take advantage of an opportunity to move over to a role at the Community Foundation here in Richmond, where I had a very similar role, where I was working with nonprofits to help provide technical assistance and connect them with resources, funding and technical assistance resources, so that they could be even stronger in serving their community. And then I also got to work with donors who were interested in finding opportunities where they could provide funding that met those their own goals. And you know, through that work at the Community Foundation, I experienced that there's so much that we all have in common. As we think about what we fundamentally want for our community, and whether folks were working in a church basement or working in a Fortune 500 company boardroom, there was a lot of common ground that could be found. So I had a lot of fun and got a lot of enjoyment out of creating bridges and pathways so that folks that seem different on the surface would have a way to interact and just do better together, do more good together. So that's where I spent the bulk of my years here in Richmond, was at the Community Foundation. So, but simultaneously, I was doing a lot of volunteering work. You know, at that time, over 10 years ago now, started up it's been a while now, maybe 2006, started up with a couple of friends, Vanessa and Kristen Kaplan, started up Hands on Greater Richmond. Mm-hmm. So that started as a true kitchen table conversation of how do we create a hub of volunteerism and service for Richmond, starting with a lot of due diligence to make sure we weren't duplicating existing efforts. But you know, back then recognizing that there wasn't that type of go-to resource for Richmond, and as it was growing and developing, it really was necessary. We had experienced, our friends had experienced difficulties finding places to get plugged in and learn about community. And so creating Hands on Greater Richmond, hands-on-rva.org, was something that I'm very proud of, that it continues to thrive as a really important asset for the region. So, and at this time, I know we'll get into what's going on at this time with COVID-19 mm-hmm. and the pandemic, but as people are looking for ways to get involved while still, you know, maintaining social distancing, and I think that hands-on-rva.org is a great place to go look for opportunities that you can continue to serve at this time.
Not only establishing that, but you also became adept at using media to actually educate the community about resources, like through radio particularly, which is, you know, a free resource for people to access to find out more about what's going on with different nonprofits in the area, and creating what turned out to be a sustainable show. But I think that shows your dedication to informing the public about what's out there that they can have access to and what's special happening in Richmond.
That's exactly right. And it's such a core to the WRIR mission as well, to ensure that the local community has access to those resources, knowledge being a really important resource. As creating Inspire Indeed, it was a platform for making sure that there was a place on air where local nonprofits and community change makers, I'm falling into the language that I used to use.
That's right.
But where folks could really like learn about what was going on and who's out there already working on trying to make a difference on that issue, whatever the issue may be. So it was really fun to interview executive directors and volunteers and learn about what people were approaching, how people were approaching issues, but then also always provide ways for the listener to get involved as well. And it was fun. I mean, radio's fun, isn't it, Karen?
I love radio.
It was an incredible experience. Unfortunately, I got just to be a little bit too busy in other aspects of life to continue the show, but I gained so much from volunteering with WRIR and just learning sound production and all of that, and the incredible people that are involved at the station. It's such a jewel and gem for the Richmond community.
And then you moved on to Richmond Opportunities. And you were executive director for, this looks like almost 3 years, or 2.5 years.
Yeah, a little less than that, yeah. So I moved over to Richmond Opportunities, Inc., which is a nonprofit that provides access and bridges to resources for people who are living in public housing, so Richmond Redevelopment and Housing Authority communities, RHA communities. And in that role, we serve, ROI serves as kind of a backbone or a conduit for how to access services so that folks, no matter what is going on, that led them to rely on that housing subsidy and public housing in order to keep a roof over their head, that they are continuing accessing other resources and support so that they can continue to grow and thrive, however that family defines thriving for themselves. A big focus of that effort was in Creighton Court. So the Office for Richmond Opportunities, Inc., ROI, is currently right over there at the East Lawn Shopping Center in the East End. So I spent a couple years out there working with coaches. It's really innovative partnership with Richmond City Health District. And the coaches are family transition coaches who meet families and individuals living in Creighton Court where they are, helping to just guide people through a process of what it is that they seek, what their goals are, and then what are the barriers that are preventing people from reaching those goals. So, and then bridging those community resources for success. Okay. Yeah, a lot of that emphasis was because of the redevelopment that's happening in RRHA properties right now, which is, it's a very challenging issue for Richmond. Obviously, the housing is in deplorable condition. It's not healthy, you know, the issues from mold to pests to just community public safety issues that people face in the community. So, you know, I think Richmond needs to tackle that issue very strategically, but a big part of that, if not the most important part of that, is making sure that people who live there are included in the process and are connected with the resources to thrive. So that's what ROI is focused on. So I was over there for a short time, really to get the effort off the ground. I was the first person, like actual staff person for ROI, as it became an independent organization. At one point, it had been more a part of RRHA, but it was spun out to be completely independent of the Housing Authority so that it could be more flexible and nimble and really maybe a little bit more able to get around some of the bureaucracy that prevents RRHA sometimes from serving their residents the way that the residents seek to be served.
Gotcha. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Women in Politics, recorded in the studios of WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. And our guest today is Elaine Summerfield, here to talk about her campaign. So let's get to that campaign. One of the things that I, you know, I wanted to review your history and even bring in the show was that I, as long as I've known you, I've seen you as someone who really has an interest in not just the community, and not necessarily even those who are having economic struggles, but also access for everyone. And it looks like your career history has really shown that you care about access to our community. So, and that's what you're stating on your campaign page. Can you talk more about how you see the access issues now in Richmond and how you might work on that in your campaign?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. So again, the campaign is for Richmond City Council to represent the 3rd District, which is a bulk of the north side of Richmond. And when you ask about accessibility and what that means right now, Richmond has experienced a lot of positive growth over the past several years. And unfortunately, as the positive changes have happened, long-term residents and residents that have traditionally been marginalized have not necessarily been able to benefit from the growth and development that's happened in Richmond. And not just that they haven't been able to benefit, it's almost like some of the changes in policy decisions are made without even considering how everybody in the community is going to be impacted. And without an intentional effort to get folks that are impacted involved at the table. So for me, access is in different levels. It's not just access to services and support, but it's access to information. It's access to that seat at the table. You know, making sure that people are at all levels of the community are involved in that process. Now, of course, not everybody is able to be involved to a deep degree. We're all busy. We all have multiple responsibilities that we're tending to. But I think in city government, we have a responsibility to share what's going on in City Hall, to really find ways to highlight the issues, those local issues that are going to impact people's day-to-day lives, and share that information proactively, and take advantage of the variety of platforms for communicating that exists these days. So access does happen at a lot of different levels. And then the flip side of that access is being an accessible public servant. You know, being there to respond to people's concerns, to respond to people's, you know, whether it's the pothole that won't get fixed or the trash that is not getting picked up, you know, down to the really deep and complex issues of the disparity in educational outcomes that we're seeing in our schools, and the disparity in resources and funding for our city schools. You know, being there to respond to what is concerning citizens is part of being accessible to the public. So that's another way that I look at accessibility as a public servant.
And talking about, to moving on to COVID, how do you think that our current health crisis changes things? You know, I mean, one in terms of access for services and how services have changed and some have gone down. Mm-hmm. And also, sorry, here I am with a two-part question. Where do you see our society, how do we recover from this? And do you have any ideas about visions for what the future would look like?
Yeah, well, first I'll talk about what the first part of the question in terms of how people are being impacted across the board by COVID-19 and the role that local government can play in that response as well. I think we've seen great leadership from some of our local leaders, like the Danny Avula, the health district director of Richmond and Henrico, I think has done a great job of being there, educating the public, but doing it in a way that's very based in science and clearly communicated. And you have a lot of faith in what he's sharing with the community. We also have seen, you know, that there are ways that local government can partner with maybe philanthropy or others to address these urgent issues. So we have seen Richmond Public Schools partner with local philanthropy, with local foundations and donors to be sure that there is access to electronics and tablets and laptops for students that may not have access otherwise. Now, that's a Band-Aid, but we are in a crisis situation. We have to do the Band-Aids at the same time that we're thinking strategically about what that means for the future, right? So technology is not the answer to addressing educational inequities, but we've got to do something immediate or as soon mm-hmm. as possible, be sure that kids have access. Back to that word access. But long term, you ask also like longer term, how is this going to change things? And it's funny because this disruption, people talk about big disruptions resulting in innovation, and it's an opportunity to highlight innovation. Some of the innovations that we're seeing come out these days are just throwbacks. It's actually going back to what we used mm-hmm. to do. It's going back to building neighbor to neighbor, these mutual aid efforts. Myself and some neighbors in the Bellevue neighborhood where I live, we've put together a team of volunteers to just be go-to, like, block captains and, you know, just to have folks checking in on each other, making sure that people have what they need to survive and thrive as much as possible during this time. But we've also banded together to in acknowledging that other parts of Northside are struggling as well. We had a food and supply drive that we set up at Once Upon a Vine up at, on MacArthur Avenue to, you know, share some resources with other efforts that are going on, like at St. Thomas Food Pantry, Community 5050, and the Resource Center at Gilpin Court and at Calhoun Center. Yeah. You know, making sure that we are supporting each other mutually. It's not one way, it goes both ways. You know, it's mutual support that is necessary when something like this virus, it impacts all of us. It's impacting all of us. But I think there's also innovation that could come in terms of disrupting how we think of collaborative opportunities, how we might be collaborating with other governments. whether it's other regional governments, you know, can the localities mm-hmm. find ways to band together on these common issues that are affecting all of us? The drop in revenue is impacting our whole region. So are there ways that we can get together as a region? And then also making sure that we are advocating as a city for those state and federal resources that are being made available as a response to COVID-19. So it's going to be a multi-pronged approach to really make sure that we don't just survive, but we're thinking about the future and how we're going to take advantage of opportunities as they come up so we can build up and recover as quickly as possible.
Right. I'm talking about what you're doing locally with your, we only have a couple minutes left, but it reminded me of somebody in the Bellevue area, and it was years ago, and I forgot who it was. I'll have to go look through my notes and see. He had suggested that we, our neighborhood, because Chamberlain sort of cuts through this district and north side, having a hands across Chamberlain going, and the division of Chamberlain is also an economic divide as well, or it can be. So it's interesting that when you talk about that, it'd be interesting to find that person. And
yeah, well, we're actually, there are some members of a Bellevue Civic Association that are forming, we're calling it kind of an outreach team. Gentleman named Don Glazer is the chair of that. And the purpose of that is to do better coordination with other civic associations, and whether it be, Ginner Park, which has similar socioeconomic attributes as Bellevue, also with Washington Park, with Battery Park, Central Battery Park, or Central North Side, you know, how can we be working together more proactively to be one North Side? And, you know, this is an infrastructure, as I understand it, that it used to exist more in the past, and the city supported it. Like, we have infrastructure for people to be coordinating across civic associations, because so many of these divides, like Chamberlain Avenue is a very apparent one. Mm-hmm. They're artificial. I mean, we're all here in this community together. We all share the same air, the same schools, et cetera. So we could do a much better job. The city could do a much better job of investing in that type of civic infrastructure. And I see that as an opportunity that I could focus on as city council representative.
Well, good luck with your campaign. Thank you so much for talking with me about it today on Women in Politics.
Thank you for taking an interest, and I appreciate you taking the time to learn more about my backstory. And I hope I'll have another opportunity to talk more about the issues that matter to me. So thanks, Carol.
Look forward to it. Okay. I'm going to stop recording.
Women in Politics. Recorded here in the studios of WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. I'm Carol Olson, your host. Women in Politics. It's a platform to bring women together to talk about their engagement in politics, what's important to them, and what they want our representatives and delegates to hear.